This tape recording is the sole copyright of Mr. Leslie Flint and must not be reproduced in any form or played in public without the written permission of Mr. Leslie Flint.
This seance was recorded on the 29th of May, 1970, medium Leslie Flint. Just so you don't miss anything else.
Many a day who gather around and see by you. Many a day who come close, indeed very close unto you, to serve humanity, to uplift those who dwell in darkness, that they shall see the reality of life eternal and the spheres of light. Truly you are blessed, inasmuch that you have been given this truth. Great are they who come unto you. Many are they who are endeavoring to break down the barrier that lies between your world and ours. Many spheres, many conditions of life. It is my desire, and the desire of all who come, that we shall voice into your world the thoughts of the Spirit, and the reality of the Spirit, and the power and the love of the Spirit. Truly art thou blessed, O child. Thou hast made possible this link. Thou hast helped us to bridge that gulf, that divide between our world and yours, by your loving thoughts and your prayers, and by your desires for all that which is good. Truly we shall in the coming years give unto you great things, great tidings of great joy. Many should be blessed and comforted. Be then therefore of good heart. Be assured that we shall not fail in which that we have undertaken together, for that which we do is greater than ourselves. Many are they who wish now to speak unto you. Be thou therefore patient, for many shall find difficulty, but we shall overcome. We shall achieve. The word of the Spirit shall go forth in the darkness of your world, and many shall be illumined. Be of good faith. I am drawn to your world on this occasion because there's been a great deal of discussion and talk about me. And I understand that a great deal of fuss is being made just because it happens to be my subject. Well, it's all very flattering if one could be in a sense flattered in this world of ours, a world in which flattery plays no part and has no meaning and no substance. Here we are not concerned with the weaknesses of man. Here we are concerned with the strength of man, the strength of mind and of spirit. And here indeed are we only concerned with those things that are good, and those things that are eternal, those virtues for which in themselves redeem man from material things. But nevertheless, because it is my city, and because there's so much discussion and so much talk going on, and I understand there's to be another new edition of my work, this is all very pleasant. But I like to feel, in spite of all that I've said in regard to flattery or not desiring of it, nevertheless, I would be a very poor example of humanity if I didn't show some appreciation for the loving thoughts that lay behind all that is being done at this time. And I like to feel that I have left behind, and I feel I can say I have left behind in your world some illumination in my writings of the human spirit, because although in some of my characters we have perhaps an outward figure which some might even suggest were cardboard in themselves, yet inside the cardboard there was a living reality of individual spirit and the reality of characterization, because, you see, like a good many other writers, sometimes I took composites, as it were, peoples,
yes,
and made them into one,
yes,
and they, as it were, had the outward show and the outward expression, but inside we often said, well, people trying to emerge, and no doubt in some measure I succeeded. I'm very proud, if proud is the right word to,
yes,
use, in a world where virtue is predominant and pride takes little place, but nevertheless I'm still human, and also as I draw near to earth I'm conscious so much of the thought forces emanating from individuals and peoples, and the great interest that's been shown on this occasion because of my centenary and the work that I achieved, I'm nevertheless naturally affected by it, but you know, some of those people that I created were living people. I didn't always realize when I was writing that some of the people were not living on your side, but living on this. And I was unconsciously being affected by various mentalities and various personalities from this side who were impinging themselves upon me as I wrote. There were times when I would find myself skimming across the pages,
yeah,
like bilio.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, after a long session, and I reread what I'd written, I could hardly believe that some of it I'd actually written at all. And in fact, I don't think I was really conscious at times of some of the things that I'd penned.
Yeah.
And I now know, having met some of these creatures, dear souls on this side, that I did create certain characters which stand out very vividly in the pages of some of my books, who had any life, who had been individual personalities on earth. And then the circumstances, in a sense, very often in my novels, were not the same as the living reality that they experienced themselves when on earth. Nevertheless, they were impinging their personality and their character and their little foibles and their little peculiarities of speech and the quirk of circumstance which surrounded them, to some extent was renewed in the pages of my books. Though in a sense I realize also there was a composite, inasmuch that I myself took when on earth from people that I had met, and I would note little details about them, and I say, well, that's an interesting face, that's an interesting character, I like that, I must enter into one of my books such a personality. And of course it was, I now see, and much more than I ever realized on earth, that these were quite often composite personalities and characters from all walks of life on both sides. Oh, I've met a lot of my own characters here, and it amazed me to find that they had such substance, such reality. And you know, I could go into detail if I have the time, or had the time, to tell you about some of these personalities. Now you take Quilp. He actually lived on Earth. He was a real person. I didn't realize at the time I knew such a man, not to speak to him, but I'd seen him in coffee houses, I'd seen him around the side streets, and he fascinated me. And I thought, well, one day perhaps I can write up such a character. And when the book came into my mind, the outline, and the gradual sort of feeling my way with it in the early stages, and I thought this man would fit in admirably. But since I've been here, and I've met the original, whom I'd never spoken to on earth, I realized that I got his personality and his character, and although the circumstances of his life were different, obviously, to what I put into my novel, nevertheless, there was a great deal there which was of reality and truth in his character and his makeup. He was a man who had a grudge against the world. The world couldn't accept him. Partly because of his condition, his physical appearance, and also he was an inverted character, all within himself, twisted and malformed. And this came out in the book, of course, and at the same time, since I've met him here, which, of course, now is a different cup of tea, because he's quite a fine-looking fellow. That was purely physical. good. He was unfortunate enough to be so badly formed, but here I met him, and you know it's extraordinary thing that he has said to me over and over again that he himself tried desperately when on earth to live a good life, but other people wouldn't let him. Now this may sound the most extraordinary thing. We like to think that we are to some extent guardians of our own soul, guardians of our own nature, that we can form to a certain extent at least our own way of life. But it is true, and I see this now more perhaps clearly than I did when I was on earth, although I think in certain respects I did put a lot into my work which denotes my realization of this. But the point is that none of us really I wouldn't say responsible, that's not the word to use, but the point is that we are not always conscious of the fact that we have to go in a certain direction. We often say to ourselves, well, this is my life, and I'm going to do so-and-so. I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that. And of course, we find ourselves in a set of circumstances where we are influenced by people around us and the very condition under which we exist or live or were born, and we find that with the best will in the world and the best intention, we sometimes have to do things and sometimes are forced to say things which go against the grain, which are foreign to our innermost self, and we suddenly begin to realize that we are being molded not by our own selves, but by the actions and the thoughts and the conditions under which we exist. None of my characters, I suppose, nowadays in your modern world where license is free to say and do and think as you will, where man can please himself without bowing down to society or without having to be deceitful, as indeed we often had to be in my time and day, all this must sound rather strange and perhaps a little odd, because as I speak to you, to some extent, though conscious of your present condition, I'm in a way also very aware of the circumstances and the conditions of the day and age in which I had my being and in which I did my work, and which was my formative material existence. But I can see now that many of my characters, though they had great depth, there were some that really acted in a sense as a sort of, well, how would I put it, they were rather like the waxworks in Madame Tussaud.
Yes.
You know, they served a purpose. You know this, I see now if I could write again that I would write in certain respects very differently. For there were many characters that I'm very proud of, and who really were living people, and who really expressed a great deal of not only their own thoughts, but also mine. I'm used, you see, like all authors sometimes, you have certain thoughts and ideas and you want to get them over, you want to have an impact, you want to perhaps even change society or the way of thinking of society, you want to open the door so that a little light can get into the darkened room of men's minds, and so sometimes you lose your characters. Well, you see, I use certain characters for certain things that I want to change. The workhouse used to worry me. I used to think of all the appalling poverty and the tragedy of the lives, and I tried to put into certain aspects of my works a great deal of my own innermost feeling for change, the desire for change. I saw the tragedy of lives in squalor and misery. I mean Thackeray, for instance. Well, I think Thackeray. I mean, he wrote about the people of position and pride and money. He no doubt in his own fashion, in his own way, served But I was more concerned with people who had no chance, no opportunity, who were downtrodden, who no matter how much they tried, and they tried often desperately, to lead decent lives and to do the right thing. It was impossible because of their circumstances and situation. I wanted to see changes. I was concerned with changes for humanity. And I like to think at this particular time that I played some part in bringing these things about. Of course, Shaftesbury, who's a very great friend of mine, who I believe has tried to contact you before, who's with me now, is very interested in all that's transpiring in your spiritualistic activity. Now, I know quite a bit about this subject, but I didn't go into it very deeply as I did like. I've met over here a lot of people who were very much immersed in it. And of course, I've taken a great deal of interest in this for very many years. But I'm rather wandering off the point because I was talking about my books. Of course, I had to use certain characters as sort of, well, puppets. I pulled the strings and bent the leg or the arm according to my disposition. But the point is, the little Nell, I always feel rather annoyed with myself about little Nell. You know, I think I did put the icing on the cake a bit too thick.
Well.
But she was a little bit too good. I should have given her some naughtiness somewhere, should I not? And her poor grandfather. But I knew such a man as he had very well, as a matter of fact, he was a relation of mine. And he was a man that I wrote from memory, a man that I wrote from personal contact and experience. And he was such a good, kind soul, and such a stupid man. And if it hadn't been for little Nell, but you know, thinking back on that, I did make them trot about a lot. I always remember, of course, Mrs. Barley.
Yes.
Oh, I met such a woman.
Absolutely.
And there were the my dad, which I speak, there were many of these little traveling sideshows. And she was a real character. She was a woman. You see, at the time of which I speak, there were lots of these small imitations of Madame Tussaud. People traveling and touring the country. See, Madame Tussaud had made a sensation with her exhibition. And then several other people came along and they made wax images, dressed them up in costume according to the period. Oh, there were all sorts of Napoleons standing around in our place.
Oh, yeah.
The under canvas.
Yes.
But, oh, I could tell you such a lot. You know, actually, I think a little Tim, you know.
Yes.
And, you know, I think a lot of those people, and you know, it's an extraordinary thing. So many of those people were real people. The situations in which they found themselves in my novels, of course, at times were quite different to their actual lives were on earth. But I drew from humanity. I took everything from life, with a few exceptions. I do admit there were certain exceptions which I wanted certain characters, and I had to create certain characters, and I don't think perhaps they had quite the impact. But nevertheless, they voiced certain things that I want to say. Uriah Heep, for instance.
Yes.
Well, I knew such a man. He worked in an office for a firm for many years, and every time I had to go there, which was fairly often on business, he used to give me the creeps.
Yes.
I always used to think to myself, for God's sake, man, wash your hands and get it done with, you know? Always looked to me as if he was just drying his hands. It was a little quirk of habit, and he always sort of spoke from one side of his mouth and lifted one shoulder a bit. And I always thought to myself at the time, my God, if you worked for me, I wouldn't trust you any. How that poor old soul ever trusted him, I just don't know. I suppose he again was another one of my weak characters in a way. He's rather like a grandfather in the old curiosity shop, you know. Rather kind, gentle, but rather stupid man in a way. Left everything to other people, more or less. Oh, I could go on telling you about some of these people that I created. And some of them, of course, who were real people that I've met here. But I'm still hoping to write some new works. Well, I say I'm still hoping to write some new works. I have written some works. But the thing is, where the deuce could I find someone who can act in the capacity of taking down from me, who can You see, this is the problem. I've been here, I've been there. But most writers like to flatter themselves that they're original, of course, in the first instance, but very few are. Actually, when you consider the situations which are very limited that human beings can get into, of course they fall into categories, that all these things can be pigeonholed. Every novel, every story, in a sense, can be pigeonholed. We have the familiar Cinderella story, which is universal, which has been told in so many different ways. There are so many, many different stories. I've met Balzac here, I've met so many people, and we all get together sometimes, and although we don't have a club, as you call it, we do have a place where we do meet. Many of us, we discuss all sorts of things, particularly to do with our writings and our works, and there are vast libraries here. Everyone's work is there, can be read. But the extraordinary thing, oh, this is something I must tell you. You know, here, people can take a book, and they can open it, and they can read it. But it's not like reading cold print. Here, as you read, it's all picturized, and living before you, as it were, like a these newfangled biograph things that you have, you know, almost as if you could see it on a kind of mental screen. This is the joy. Of course, the author, when he writes, if he's a good author, he's picturizing the situation, and he's picturizing the individuals and what they are doing, and as they are speaking, and what is happening to them is all coming out in his writing. But the average person, I should imagine, who reads, unless they too have a very vivid imagination, cannot always create for themselves a clear picture. In any case, what picture they had may be quite different to the picture the author had intended. But here, if you can pick up a novel or a book of interest, if you can read it, and as you read it, the reality of what the author had in mind is picturized on the ether or atmosphere. It's almost like this biograph thing that you have, but much better, because it is a living reality. You see, life is another thing people don't understand in your world, even the spiritualists, they don't understand that there are many aspects of life. I don't mean by this different spheres. That, of course, is so. According to one's evolution or lack of it, one finds oneself in a set of circumstances best suited to you according to your light or lack of it. But here it is possible, on any particular sphere, to be able to enter into not only something that you may be interested in, such as the reading of a book or listening to some piece of music, and entering into it and becoming part of it, or it becoming part of you, and you seeing as it was intended by the author, and you hearing not only as the composer intended you should hear, but also the picturization of what the music represents all happening at the same time. There are so many aspects of lives, of living, the one can enter into. You see, you cannot avoid issues here. You can escape them pretty well on earth. You can build up a pretty good facade, and people will say, oh, he's such a charming fellow, you know. But underneath, because you don't really know him, he's quite a different character. There's none of this false facade here. You are seen for what you really are. You are accepted for what you are. You see, here it is the reality of self which is apparent as clear as crystal to every human being with whom you come in contact. The joy of living here, the joy of expressing, the joy of being, the joy of knowing, and above all, the joy of expressing and evolving and developing and entering into higher realms of light and illumination and experience. And this is the great joy, this is the great beauty. Oh, I must come back and tell you, I've got so many things on my mind and I can't clarify them all yet. This is my first real attempt at communicating, so you must be patient with me. But I would like to come and talk to you not only about my past and my novels, but also about things appertaining to life here, what I'm doing and the people I've met, and their way of life, and all the things, or some of the things at least, that we do that are common to us in our every, I was going to say everyday happenings, but of course we don't have day and night as we do. We have life, which is in itself so full, so magnificent, so rewarding. There is no need for fear. no one should fear death. Death is a great door that opens freely, that all may enter and see with a greater vision and a greater joy and a greater beauty God's will and purpose. No one need fear dying. Dying is the beginning of life. In a sense, it is the opening of the door of knowledge and experience. You are, as it were, in the present stages of learning, evolving, experiencing. But it is like the kindergarten, it is like the little schoolroom of the infant. You're learning lessons gradually and experiencing things. And not until you are released and come out into the greater world of experience and knowledge of spiritual truth and realization, then you hope to ever realize fully the meaning and purpose of God's will. But this will all come. Another time, my dear ladies, I'll come and talk to you. But may the good Lord bless you both, as I know he will, and continue in your good work, so that you might be a light in the darkness that others may see and follow the path of righteousness and truth and illumination of the Spirit. My blessings to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. B